Thanks, Hazel. Good evening. Good to see you all. I wonder if you like getting gifts. Yeah? I love getting gifts. It's really nice. Sometimes I walk into my office and somebody will put a box of Maltesers on my desk. For no other reason at all than they happen to like the pasta. It's cool. Because I just love Maltesers. Some of you know that. Hint, hint. A birthday wouldn't be a birthday unless I got a box of Maltesers. That's all I need on my birthday is a box of Maltesers, which is cool as well. But we've been given gifts all along, and I want us to talk tonight or think about this amazing gift that God has given us. And the problem is with a gift that too often it's not a gift that we feel very good at holding, good at opening or unwrapping. And sometimes we never feel quite confident that with this gift we're doing what we're supposed to be doing with it. And if I came along to you and said, what are you doing with the gift? You'd be saying, I'm not very good with this gift. And so I want us to think about it tonight, because my heart, and I believe God's heart for us as a church, is that we do take a hold of this gift that he's given us, and it becomes kind of integral or part of the warp and the weft, the fiber of who we are and what we are. Part of the gift is already a heritage in this church. Because from 1978, when this church and before this church began, so much of who this church is and what this church was born out of people taking a hold of this gift and actually using it. And making it available to others. And so I want us to think for a moment or two tonight. We're going to do it in a different way, a very different way. I've done this occasionally before, and it's always a bit scary for me, because I don't know how you're going to react or cope with it, but I'm big enough and old enough to cope with it if you don't cope with it. But I'm going to talk about the gift, and the gift comes in the way of a story. But the gift already is a legacy to us. And before I went away in the summer on study break, I'd begun to think about this, because one of my disturbances in my spirit is that the way the gift works at the moment is that so many people of a generation have taken a hold of the gift, and so many people of another generation somehow haven't quite got the gift yet. Or if they have, it's not kind of following through here. And I wish and I long that it would, because nothing happens here without this gift. Nothing happens without it being used. Some of us use it on a Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the morning and at 12 o'clock at lunchtime, at 7:30 at night. But quite frankly, that's a generation. And I long that some of our other generations would get a hold of the gift and they'd say, whoa, what an amazing privilege to have this gift. I'm going to come along and I'm going to share in this gift with other people around me. And then some of you will be thinking, what on earth is he talking about? Some of you are already smiling and some of you already know. The great thing about gifts is when you're given them, you've got a choice whether you open them or not. Some of us say, oh, that's a nice gift. I'll put it on one side. I'm not that kind of guy. I like these gifts. I've been going to places where I can open this gift since I was 14. And I had a brief passage of time when I didn't follow God, and I kind of put the gift on one side. But when God grabbed a hold of my life, I began to go to places where I could use the gift again. And some of you may have guessed now that we're talking about prayer. And all I'm going to do tonight is tell you a story of prayer. And I hope the story works for you. Jesus told stories and he didn't always explain them. And I'm not going to either. But I do hope that across the generations tonight, we will grab this gift in a more deeper and stronger way than we ever have done before. Because nothing in this church works without us taking a hold of the gift. And I want to plead, if I can plead with anybody, in freedom, not because I put a guilt trip on anybody, because I can't be doing with that. In freedom, take a hold of this beautiful gift of prayer that God has given to us. The right of access to his presence. Will you take a hold of this gift for yourself and together with us as a church, maybe in a way that you've never done before? Here's a prayer, and it's a story. It's the story of Cinderella. Some of you know the story, but it's a story of prayer. Home alone was not what she had in mind when she became. Sweeping by the fire was a happy occupation, especially in winter. But to be alone, to stay alone, was not what was purpose for her. She was born for a special touch. You may have guessed it, being Cinderella, she had two sisters. One named Faith, and the other named Charity. Now, in most stories of this nature, you'd expect that two such sisters were ugly, selfish, peevish, utterly difficult, and even dastardly with their sibling sister. But in this story, nothing could be further from the truth. Faith and Charity knew deeply in their heart of hearts that they needed and relied upon all the virtue, all the attention, all the energy that they could give to Cinderella. Their beauty, radiance, strength, their depth and character all came from dear Cinders. One day a poor beggar came to the door of the great house they lived in. Charity, by chance, was in the hallway when the doorbell rang. No one was expected, so it was with much curiosity that she opened the door. Her surprise was more shock than sudden interest. The odour of the beggar went before him and assaulted Charity's nostrils to the point that her stomach turned and she was almost sick. Gulping for air, she surveyed this wretched creature with great pity, but also, I'm sad to say, with deep disdain. You may say, how could she both pity someone and disdain them? Well, it's a mistake to mistake pity for compassion or mercy. Pity may beget mercy, but unless it's fed by compassion, it may well stay there as an end in itself, neither use nor ornament. But it's also prey to other emotions. And this day, Charity's pity led to disdain. How dare he dirty my doorstep? How dare he come begging in this neighbourhood? Who does he think he is? And as the poor beggar held out his hand, the terrible outburst. I might have Charity for a name, but I don't have Charity for a nature. Be off with you, you wretch. And with that, Charity slammed the door. She heard the shuffle and the scuffle of bared feet and the dragging of bags of bits of belongings that the beggar had gathered over days and weeks and years since his downfall. Immediately, Charity felt something which was almost like a pain, a calm which took over her body, a grey goose across her grave, a shiver down her spine, indecipherable but real. She felt weak, and instead of her usual flush of rosy red-cheekedness, she felt more pale and wan, a feeling only borne out by the hall mirror which she glanced in and then stopped at to gaze in shock. Well, humph, she said to herself, that's what you get from opening the door to strangers. Charity waltzed off, but the feeling and its pallor didn't leave her all day. In fact, imperceptibly to her, it got worse. The more she thought about the incident with the beggar, the more she shunned his impertinent advances and spurned all thoughts of any aid she may have given the poor man. What Charity did not know, did not understand, was that downstairs, seeking to go about her duties, Cinderella stumbled and fell. A weakness had come over her the moment Charity slammed the door shut on the vagrant man. And that weakness remained. Cinderella was not just empathic to her sisters. She was symbiotic with them. She did not, could not exist without them. But little did they realize, neither could they live, truly live without her. Later that day, faith happened on a wonderful opportunity to grow, to flourish. Sadly, she did not, and tragedy followed. As she walked in the garden, enjoying its beauty and bounty, delighting in the sensuous taste of a lush peach as she chewed into it and the juices dropped stains carefree onto her gown, she suddenly heard a cry ahead of her. "It comes from the river," she thought, and she picked up her gown to run towards the frightened calls from the direction of the water. Sure enough, as she cleared the boundary of the garden and the river came into view, she could see an upturned boat floating rapidly downstream, followed by a frantically waving boy who clearly capsized his craft and fallen in. Faith knew the water here was deep and the current swift. She had one chance to stop the boy, to somehow drag him to the riverbank and haul him to safety. Glancing down, she saw the fallen limb of an elder tree cracked off from its trunk in a storm which had passed a few days before. It was not too heavy, so Faith stooped, lifted, and held the branch out over the river. "Catch this and hold on," she shouted as the boy drifted nearer. A problem. Faith could see the boy's trajectory would not bring him near enough to the branch to save him. Her heart beat. Her hope began to fail. She needed to be nearer, needed to step into the water itself, but it was dangerous. She looked around for some other aid, but none could be seen and no one seemed near. The only way to save the boy would be to risk herself. Panic took hold. The desire to save him, to catch him with her fishing rod branch and reel him in, was overwhelming, but not so that she would chance herself. Short of breath and with pulse racing, she lunged once more from the bank of the river, knowing full well she would not reach. But her lunge meant she'd risked as much as she believed able. Faith failed. As he went by, the currents pulled the boy into their depths, and Faith saw him no more. What would she do? Who should she tell? No one else saw this moment, this tragedy. Faith scuttled home, took to the bathroom, and as shock and nausea overwhelmed her, she was violently sick. And so was Cinders. At the exact moment Faith decided not to step into the waters, Cinder was washing down the cellar's stone floors with a mop and bucket. She stepped back, and in a trice, her heel caught the proud edge of a stone slab. Backwards she went, dragging the mop and bucket with her. The bucket fell over and water sluiced everywhere. So by the time Cinders hit the floor, with a heavy, lung-emptying thump, she landed in a river of muddy moppings. Shock flooded her whole being, and Cinders retched. Faith carried the weight of what had happened like a millstone. It was as if she herself had drowned and been carried under the waters. The memory kept flooding back and engulfing her, so at times she found herself gulping for air, her heart banging like a kettle drum in her ears. Guilt, regret, a stream of if-only questions assuaged her mind and her soul. And Cinders knew. Not that she knew the detail, but her spirit knew heaviness of heart, the pain of shame. Between Faith's failure and Charity's lack of grace, Cinders may well have been struck a mortal blow. She struggled to walk, to work. She was pale and wan. She battled with powerful palpitations, wondering, questioning, knowing something deeply were very, very wrong. So far, this story has not mentioned charming. He was altogether the meaning of his name. Graceful, elegant, courteous, caring. No airs or graces, but equally royally dignified. Charming was the love of Cinder's life. When they were together, well, when weren't they together? When they were apart, they were together. But when they were together, together, they danced. They waltzed, they loved, they laughed. They span, they spoke, they walked, they talked in silence and with words. There was nothing in the universe for Cinders more vital, more whole than being in his, in Charming's presence. Faith and Charity knew this too. I shared that somehow the sisters had life in each other, and when they were in Charming's presence, they flourished and laughed and grew and danced every bit as much as Cinders. He was not exclusive to Cinders, but the way it worked was that when they wanted to be in Charming's presence, they had to go to Cinders. And Cinders always, always delighted to take them to him. If there was any sadness at all about Cinders, it was that her siblings did not quite share her delight of Charming. She was always glad if and when they did. Equally, they were always glad if and when they'd been in his presence. Faith kept her guilty secret. Charity kept hers. But the problem with guilty secrets is their wearing on the soul. They weakened, and Cinders weakened. After one long, torrid, sleepless night, Charity woke with a new resolve. Days of worry had left her pallid and frail. Finally, she could bear it no more. Down the stairs she went to where Cinders was working, across the kitchen floor to Cinders, brushing away at the hearth. She took her by the hand and with a desperate, pleading look in her eyes, said only one word. Charming. Cinders reached her hand free upwards towards the ceiling. No, not the ceiling, open to the heavens. In a trice, Charity, Cinders and Charming were spinning across a vast open ballroom. Cinders and Charming were laughing with joyful delight. Charity held on to the two, but as she span in a whirl of waltz, she wept for her shame, her pain, her regret. Wept that she knew that Charming and Charity knew. Wept because she knew that whatever they loved her, accepted, forgave her. Then wept with joy, which turned to laughter as she span and somehow grew at least 3 inches and 3 degrees more lovely than before. Colour returned to her cheeks and she shone more radiant than ever. Charity gazed at Charming and knew that her radiance was and only ever would be from him. The pain in Faith's heart only matched the worry in her thoughts. Days wore into weeks, and although she knew there was no cure in the stupid stubbornness of fear, guilt, and shame, she refused to make the journey to Cinders and on to Charming. She saw Cinders, but it was from a distance. She noticed that Cinders limped a little. Her leg was still badly bruised from the fall across the bucket. She thought that her sister looked jaded, tired. Weeks wore into months. She hardly ever saw Cinders now, but when she did, she could hardly bear to look. Cinders was bent, bowed over. The bruising had not healed. It had worsened and deepened and left Cinders in a deal of pain. Faith could only stand a glance at her distant sister. She had enough of trouble of her own. Her failure, her shame had led her into a dark hole of depression. She lived in a downward spiral of blame and anger and regret. And above all, she did not believe she could be healed. Did not believe forgiveness and restoration were available to her. Those were distant, feigned hopes which had faded through her refusal to journey with Cinders to visit Charming. Weeks wore into years. Faith hardly saw Cinders at all. In the distance, her sister looked like a crumpled heap of her former self. Faith knew she was the cause of this. Her own weight of soul, her unwillingness to make the healing journey, was also the ruin of Cinders. One day, whilst trudging Faith to the ground around the garden, Faith thought she heard the faintest of cries. Stop. There. Again. Yes. A weak cry for help coming from the far courtyard. She ran, wondering what was wrong. Her mind instantly filled her with dread as she remembered another time she'd heard cries for help. As she entered the courtyard, she saw an almost amusing but deadly, perilous scene. Cinders had gone to the well for a bucket of water. As she hauled the full pail up, she'd lost her grip and let go. The bucket had fallen, dragging the rope down the deep well. Perchance, it had snagged Cinder's ragged dress and dragged her with it over the well wall. Cinder's was desperately hanging on to the rope for all her life. It was quickly clear to Faith she could not hold on for much longer and would plunge to her death. Fear of failure made her falter. But love for her sister took over. She ran to the well wall, reaching out as far as she could. Risking her own life and limb, she managed to grab the rope and pull it to the side. Taking it with both hands and pulling it with all her might, inch by inch, hand over hand, Faith drew the rope till it blistered and burned her palms. In a wonderful, sudden moment, Cinders plopped over the wall of the well and was safe. Faith wrapped her in her arms, gulping in air from her exertions, and sobbed. Sobbed because Cinders was safe, but sobbed because the space of distance was bridged and they were back together. Pain, weight lifted along with shame, and without seeing movement, without moving, the scene changed and Faith whirled, waltzed, spun with Cinders, and as she looked up from her embrace, she realized they were in the arms of Charming. Laughter and lightness replaced tears. Faster and faster they spun as their dance choreographed into the stars. And they spun through the universe, bridging time and space and other dimensions, all in the presence of Charming. And back into their world, but with weight lifted from their shoulders. Back to normal and not. To life and life beyond and through. Through Cinders and into the place where being known and knowing became one in his place. His charming presence. Cinderella, a prayer story.